Better to travel alone than with enemies.
I'm Cal Mitchum, tech man for Baron Thayer of Ratakville. That's the ville she was talking about on the far side of the island. There's more, but they're rad-pit dreckholes without a single working blaster or a tin pot to piss in. But you want a ship, you got it. Just take us with you.
Big words. You got the powder to deliver that, lad?
The Sig Sauer was still in his hand, the barrel pointing steadily at the stranger. The others in the room stared longingly at the open doorway, but the dead black of Ryan's blaster kept them at bay.
Fucking right I do. I'll get you a ship if I've got to steal one.
The man seemed too confident, too sure of himself, and had more smarts than a typical Secman goon. Ryan decided to take a chance.
Major, behind you!
He pointed the blaster away from the Secman. Mitchum spun, hands reaching for a blaster not there. Then he turned, his face a controlled mask of rage.
Tricky bastard. Okay, I'm Colonel Mitchum, Sec Chief for Ratakville.
Ryan, JB, and Jack.
The rest of the prisoners are my troops. Can't leave them behind.
Can and will, unless I decide they're useful.
Need them if you want me.
A noise echoed down the corridor, and Jack moved out of sight.
They're coming back! We must leave now!
Do we have a deal?
Ryan knew the man was negotiating for the lives of his troops. That said a lot about him.
Deal.
Relief easing his countenance, Mitchum exhaled. He extended his hand, and the men shook.
Everybody start walking. We have horses at the surface. Lag behind. And we leave you, deal or not.
The companions herded the freed prisoners along the corridor, carefully retracing their steps. Ryan was very glad he had made a map. The scraps of cloth had been moved to new locations, and they would have been seriously lost following those. Rounding a corner, Ryan and Jack opened fire as a gang of teenagers burst out of a room, their arms full of flintlocks. The teens cried out as the Sig Sauer and Colt Python took their lives, displaying their sharply filed teeth. Bleeding badly, a girl tried to bring a weapon to bear, but JB emptied the Uzi into her, driving the body backward under the brutal assault of the copper-jacketed rounds. Stepping over the twitching bodies, Ryan checked the room they had come from and saw it was an armory. Big wooden barrels of black powder filled the room, wall racks held dozens of flintlock rifles, and a barrel was jammed full of Navy cutlasses. The Cannies had to have eaten a lot of pirates. Good for them. Ryan smiled as he noticed a couple of firebirds on display, the lacquered tubes resting on wooden pegs jutting from the wall for fast access. He debated taking one, but the risk of their being booby-trapped was far too great. It's what he would have done, and he always had to consider what the enemy could do, not what they might. However, the flintlock should be safe. He took a pistol and tucked it into his belt.
Everybody grab a blaster and ammo.
There was a post covered with short pegs, plump ammo pouches hanging conveniently near the door. Whoever the canny quartermaster was, he knew his stuff.
Flintlocks?
Take spares for Doc, and the others also.
Ammo. Gotcha.
JB's face brightened in understanding, and he shoved several hand cannons into his munitions bag. Next, he added a coiled length of dried grass as a fuse. Then he spied the S&W M4000 shotgun on a table. Reclaiming his alley sweeper, JB checked the weapon to make sure it was okay, then draped it over his shoulder. Back in business. The Secmen eagerly armed themselves, passing over a few of the flintlocks to take others. Mitchum tested the black powder to the black by licking some from a palm, and nodded in approval. Trained hands loaded their weapons in amazing speed, and the group exited the armory with long blasters in their hands, and two hand cannons tucked into every belt. JB was the last to leave the room, and he spent a few moments breaking the lock on the door. Then he jammed a copper knife blade into the jamb and snapped off the handle.
Wouldn't open that easily.
He tossed the handle away.
How long?
Roughly minutes. It's not my fuse, so I can't know for sure. Maybe 8, could be 12.
Fair enough. Everybody, double time.
The group hustled through the zigzagging corridors, encountering no resistance until reaching the last intersection. Two cannies were dragging away the with a pile of dead dogs on a bamboo litter. The men dropped the animals and hastily ran away at the sight of the heavily armed party. Ruthlessly, the prisoners gunned down the cannies from behind and spat on the corpses as they hurried by. Reaching the collapsed section of the warren, Ryan paused at the right turn and signaled it was all clear to Doc.
Lady Anne, we meet once more.
The scholar smiled, then looked over the Sekhmen. They were as rough and tumble a group as he had ever seen.
Your entourage, I assume?
JB patted his munitions bag.
6 minutes and counting, Doc.
Doc said nothing, but his eyes went wide, and he started up the mound of loose dirt. Reaching the surface, Doc unlimbered the M16 and stood guard while the others clambered out of the blast crater. Exiting the tunnel, the group quickly got away from the depression in the ground as the rim was soft and crumbled easily under their boots and bare feet.
This way!
Mitchum waved a blaster and headed for the water pool. Ryan instead started up the inclined ramp at a full sprint.
Forget it! Follow me!
In ragged formation, the group charged past the punchy stick wall and braked to a halt upon reaching level ground. Masked by moon shadows, Christy and Mildred were waiting there with blasters drawn. Dean was nowhere in sight.
Hello, Adam.
Hey, Andrea.
The women immediately relaxed. Mitchum arched an eyebrow at the exchange, but said nothing. It was patently obvious they were exchanging some kind of a code. Who exactly were these outlanders? Christy rested the barrel of the Steyr on a shapely shoulder.
Nice to see you again, lover.
Ryan pulled her close for a hard kiss and took the long blaster.
Move fast. We lit their armory.
Dean, get the horses!
Instantly, the boy bolted from the stand of bamboo and dashed into the darkness of the night.
Horses? Scorch me. We might live to see daylight yet.
JB tossed Mildred the scattergun. She caught the blaster and pumped the action to chamber around. Watching the exchange, Colonel Mitchum was impressed that a lowly woman knew anything about blasters. Just then, there was a loud bang, and a Sekhmen fell to the ground, a jagged hole in his chest. In unison, the companions turned and fired down into the vill. A group of cannies, armed with long blasters, took cover in the smoking rubble and started to reload. Leading the way, Ryan sprinted along the path through the bamboo forest and found Dean slashing the ropes tethering the horses. Most of the animals were bareback, but there was no time to find and cinch on saddles. Clumsily, the people climbed onto the placid animals and rode out the swinging gate. Once outside, they kicked the beasts hard and started to gallop away from the hidden vill at top speed. The companions and the Sekhmen had just cleared the patch of dry land and were splashing through the beginnings of the swamp when a flash of light lit up the sky. As wind buffeted man and horse, they watched as a column of fire and smoke formed a classic mushroom shape that reached for the stars. Mildred stared at the mushroom cloud expanding over the shaking bamboo.
Mother of God, how much powder did you use?
Everything they had.
Just then, the ground tremors arrived, and the horses reared on their hind legs, screaming in terror. The riders fought to control their mounts.
Watch for debris!
Too late. The first of the wreckage started to plummet from the sky. Charred heads splashed into the soggy landscape, along with bent blasters and unrecognizable things blackened by smoke and fire. Racing into the trees, the group waited until the grisly rain finally ceased. A reddish light swelled to fill the world, and they could see the bamboo forest was on fire, the flames illuminating the surrounding countryside for miles.
Which direction to the vill?
Ryan set the Steyr into a more comfortable position across his back. He was dirty and tired, but they couldn't make camp until far away from here. A few of the cannies might have survived and could come after them in a night creep. Best to get some distance for safety. Gazing at the stars overhead, Anne turned in the saddle and pointed.
That way, north!
No, we should go east from here. Then north, after passing the rad zones.
Reining in his horse to keep it steady, Ryan studied the two people, debating their answers.
How far?
A week on foot. Day or so on horseback. Easy traveling. Flat land, lots of fresh water.
Moaning across the land, a warm wind blew over the group, rustling the leaves on the trees and carrying the smell of fiery death.
East it is.
Ryan didn't believe a word said by either of them. Personally, he much preferred fighting cannies. At least you could see them coming. The bedroom was lit only by candles, the flickering light playing across the waiting people. Dried flower petals mixed into the wax gave off a sweet perfume. The only door was shut tight and locked with a heavy wooden bar, and a cheery blaze burned in the pre-dark fireplace, giving off soothing waves of warmth. Standing on a small rug in the middle of the room, a slim woman with long blonde hair slowly unbuttoned her shirt and let it slide off her body. The cloth fluttered to the floor, and she ran delicate hands across her taut stomach, then upward to cup her heavy breasts. Her nipples hardened immediately,